Naaman the Syrian, Chapter 93. A band of Syrians go through the land of Israel. As they go, they plunder and rob, and the crops in the fields are trampled upon and destroyed. Wherever they come, they break into the houses and take whatever is desirable to them. This is both distressing and disturbing. If the Israelites try to defend themselves, they are slain. Time after time, these troops of soldiers come to ransack the land. They not only take the gold and silver, but sometimes they also take boys and girls. Those children must work for them as slaves. In one of those raids, they had taken a young girl with them. No doubt, in her terror, she had shouted for help, but it was of no use. She was dragged along roughly and probably beaten. She must go to that faraway land of Syria. Finally, as she arrived in the strange country where the enemies of her people lived, brutish people lived there, she became a slave in the house of Naaman, who was a general in the Syrian army. Naaman is a very prominent Syrian. The citizens respect him highly, for he is a brave officer. At one time he delivered the Syrians from their enemies. This young Israelitish girl must work as a slave in the home of this man. Often she would cry, and when she thought of her father and mother, probably she would never see them again. Still, Naaman and his wife were good to this girl. She was not treated cruelly. That was one thing in her favor, because she could have had much worse treatment. Thus, Naaman the Syrian is a prominent and honored man. He is wealthy and lives in a magnificent house. He has men servants and women servants, and also men and women slaves. And still, Naaman is not happy. Not happy? Why not? What is lacking? Isn't he mighty and rich? Ah, nothing is lacking in that respect, but he is sick. Sick? Yes, the wealthy Naaman is greatly afflicted. He is a leper. By the goodness of God, we in our country scarcely know what leprosy is, but in the Orient it is well known. This is a terrible sickness. Gradually the entire body becomes covered with sores. These sores are open and very painful, and they become larger. The fingers and the toes would decay and drop off, and the teeth would fall out of the mouth. O children, I cannot describe it all to you. It is so terrible. Do you know what is the worst of all? Leprosy is incurable. Any person who becomes leprous may just as well give up all hopes of ever getting better. Even the most eminent physicians can do very little for it. Naaman the Syrian also was afflicted with the terrible disease of leprosy. What benefit does he now have from all his wealth and honor? None. None. Slowly the disease will get worse, and finally with great pain he will die. Probably when he first became sick, he called the most competent doctors, but to no avail. Against this disease, they were helpless. For Naaman and his wife, this is very grievous. Daily they talk about it with each other. Their countenances are serious and sad. The happiness in their lives is gone. Poor, poor Naaman. The little girl from Israel is busy with her work in the house of Naaman. She stops now and then, and stares meditatively in the distance. Alas, she has such compassion for her master. She knows that after years of intense suffering, He must die from this sickness. Oh, if he only lived in her land, the land of Canaan, then he probably could be cured, because a prophet of the Lord lives in her native land. He already had performed so many miracles, and he also could help her master, that is sure. And now this great question confronts her. Shall she tell them? She hardly dares do so. Possibly Naaman and his wife will secretly laugh at her. At last, she thinks, I will tell them, and they must know for themselves what they will do. She looks for her mistress. Hesitatingly, she says, if my master lived in Samaria, he probably could be cured. A prophet of our God lives there. However, the wife of Naaman does not laugh at her. She is glad when she hears this. She tells her husband. A little hope of recovery comes into the heart of Naaman. Could that be possible? Would he get better again? That would be wonderful. The longer he thought about it, the more desire he had to journey to Samaria. Couldn't he at least try it? Do you know what? He will discuss it with the king. The king immediately approves of the plan of Naaman. It would grieve him greatly if he had to lose his best general by death. He will try to help him. Do you know what the king does? He writes a letter to Joram, the king of Israel. In this letter is written, Naaman, my general, is coming to you. He is leprous. I am sending him to you to be cured from his leprosy. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, thought that Joram, the king of Israel, would send him to the prophet who works miracles. When the letter is ready, he seals it and gives it to Naaman. Naaman goes home and gets ready for his long journey. He takes with him thousands of dollars worth of gold and silver and costly clothing. All this is for a present. He will give it to the prophet of Israel. Yes, Naaman is accustomed to this in his own country, and whenever the magicians who live in Syria do anything, they must be amply rewarded. Naaman, the heathen, thinks that Elisha is also a magician who demands rich gifts. Well then, money is no obstacle to him. He has plenty of gold and silver. When all things are ready, he gets into his chariot and rides away. However, he does not go alone. Oh no, many servants go with him. They must protect him, and they must help whenever it is necessary. While his wife watches him go, he rides away with his group in the direction of the border of Israel. Will he return as a cured man? Here is a letter from Ben-Hadad, my king. With these words, Naaman gives the sealed letter to Joram, the king of Israel. After a safe journey, Naaman has arrived in Samaria. Joram takes the letter, tears it open, and reads it. While he is reading, he turns white from fright. When he finally folds this sheet of paper, he sighs deeply and looks around helplessly. Afterward, he rends his clothes and cries out fearfully, Am I God? Can I kill and can I make alive? How can the king of Syria ask me to cure Naaman of his leprosy? I cannot do it. God alone can do that. And if I do not help Naaman, and if I do not send him back cured, the king of Syria will become angry and declare war against me. He is afraid that Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, is seeking an excuse so that he can fight against him. But Joram, why don't you send Naaman to Elisha, the prophet? Joram doesn't even give this a thought. Besides, Elisha is not his friend. He dislikes Elisha. Why? Oh, he fears the prophet of the Lord. He does not want to listen to the warnings of this faithful prophet. Although Joram does not think about Elisha, still Elisha thinks about Joram. And when Elisha hears that the king had rent his clothes, he sends this message to Joram. Why did you rend your clothes? Send Naaman to me. He shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. Joram is glad and relieved. He immediately sends one of his servants with the Syrian general to show him the way to the home of the prophet. The Syrian chariots go rattling through the streets of Samaria and soon stop in front of Elisha's house. Naaman waits. He expects Elisha to come out to greet him. Of course, he will, for surely it is a great honor to the prophet that Naaman, an honorable general from Syria, comes to him. Naaman thinks the prophet will examine his sores, will strike his hand over them, and will pray to his God, thus causing the leprosy to disappear. Naaman doesn't know any better. The Syrian magicians acted in this way, and therefore he thought the Israelite magicians would do so too. But Naaman must learn that Elisha is no magician, but a servant of the Almighty God. The door of Elisha's house opens, and a young man comes outside. He is Gehazi. Thus says my master, Elisha's servant says to the mighty Syrian, go to Jordan, dip yourself in the water 7 times, and you shall be cured of your terrible disease. Gehazi returns into the house. Naaman stares after him in confusion. Then he becomes angry. Is that a way to be treated? Is he a mischievous boy? Why didn't Elisha come himself? Couldn't he, who is a general, be treated with a little more respect? Naaman feels offended. And besides, why must he go to Jordan, to that river with its muddy water? Nothing doing. He will be wiser. He will not do it. The rivers in Syria are much larger, and the water is much cleaner. What does the prophet think? Red with anger, he gives the command to return to his own country. Children, he is too proud to listen to Elisha the prophet. Hesitatingly, his servants obey, for they dare not refuse for fear that their mighty general would become angry with them. On the way, they make an effort to show him the error of his actions. My father, they say timidly. What is it? Naaman asks curtly. My father, if the prophet had asked you to do something very difficult, you would have done it, wouldn't you? But now that he has told you to do something very simple, you do not want to do it. And really, why don't you? Couldn't you try it? They advise him. You are right, Naaman answers after thinking it over. Come on, I shall do as he told me. Let us ride toward Jordan. Immediately his servants obey. They are glad their beloved general listens to them. When they come to the river, Naaman climbs from his chariot and dips himself 7 times into the water. Then he can feel it. The terrible leprosy disappears. He is cured from the incurable disease. He did not expect that. Ashamed, he climbs out of the river and gives orders to return to the house of Elisha. He will personally thank that wonderful prophet and give him a rich reward. With full speed, they return to Samaria. For the second time, he stops at the house of Elisha. Respect for Israel's prophet has come into the heart of Naaman. Respect and thankfulness. He also has respect for the mighty God of Elisha. The door opens again, but this time Elisha comes outside. Naaman first had to learn to obey. The pride and haughtiness of Naaman had to be broken. Then Elisha will come to him. "O," Naaman says, "now I know that no mightier God is to be found upon the whole earth than the God of Israel. I have returned to thank you kindly and to give you a big reward." Elisha will not take a reward. He refuses decidedly to take the smallest thing. Elisha does this purposely. The God of Israel never sells his blessings, but he gives them freely. Naaman must fully realize the difference between the idols of Syria and the living God of Israel. Naaman cannot understand why Elisha refuses. He persists on proffering a gift, but Elisha continues to refuse. "If you are determined not to take anything," Naaman says at last, "then I would like to make a friendly request. May I take a wagon load of earth with me? When I come home, I want to build on this soil an altar unto the God of Israel. Henceforth, I will worship the God of Israel. However, when I go into the heathen temple with my king, out of custom I must kneel before the idols, but I will not mean it. Pardon me in this thing." "Go in peace," Elisha answers. Cheerfully and with a thankful heart, Naaman returns to his own country. He is completely cured. His wife will be very happy too. Gehazi stands with a dissatisfied look. He saw and heard everything. He thinks it foolish of Elisha not to take anything. Now he also will receive nothing. He sees them riding away. To him, this is cause for deep regret. Do you know what? He will run after Naaman. Even if Elisha wants nothing, he does, and gladly too. Unnoticed, he slips from the house and runs after the chariot of Naaman. Naaman sees him coming far in the distance. He immediately stops, descends from the chariot, and walks to meet him. "Is all well?" Naaman asks Elisha's servant. Panting from running so fast, he answers, "Yes, all is well. But visitors came unexpectedly to my master. Two young men of the sons of the prophets from Mount Ephraim came to him. Elisha would like to receive a talent of silver and two changes of garment for them. May he still have it?" "That is not the truth, Gehazi. The entire tale you are telling is a lie. You are deceiving Naaman." However, Gehazi does not care. He wants the money. "Of course," Naaman answers. "I will give you not only one, but two talents of silver." He is glad he still can give something. Two of his servants will bring it to Gehazi's home, so he won't have to carry it himself. Gehazi would rather not have this, but he dares not refuse. However, and when they come near the home of Elisha, he says, "Now I can carry it the rest of the way. You can return quickly." He takes the silver and the clothing from them and brings them into the house. Elisha must not know anything about it. Later, he appears before the prophet and tries to act as though nothing had happened. Elisha looks at him searchingly. Gehazi, from where have you come? What did you do? He asks. Without a blush, Gehazi answers, And thy servant went not hither or thither. That means, I have been nowhere. I do not know what you mean. Elisha answers sternly, You must not deceive me, young man. I know what has happened. Secretly you ran after Naaman, and you have taken a present from him. It was not the proper time for that, Gehazi. Naaman must know that Israel's God helps freely, without money and without reward. In this case, I was not permitted to take anything. Because you have done this, you shall receive a heavy punishment, for God's honor should have been upheld. The leprosy from which Naaman was cured shall come upon you and your children. Ashamed, Gehazi stands before his master. When Elisha is finished speaking, Gehazi goes away. As he leaves the house of the prophet, already his face is white from the festering sores. He is a leper. Now he has that terrible, incurable disease. This is the punishment for his covetousness. This history is a serious warning for us, boys and girls. Never try to become rich by lying and deceiving, or by stealing, because the blessing of the Lord will never rest upon it. Instead, the curse shall rest upon it. This history is related in God's word to warn us against covetousness. If you are in need of anything, you may ask the Lord for it. The Lord did not send Naaman away. Neither will he refuse us the things which we humbly ask of him, if they are for our profit and to the honor of God.